Hello, and thank you for listening to great speeches and interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman, and our final segment tonight will include a number of songs and a report from Cancer Alley from Living on Earth.
And I hope that he heard me when I called from far behind him. I miss him every day that he was gone. But now I cry alone. I put on my bravest face and watched him off to war. My lover will be coming home no more. My lover will be coming home no more. In a little town outside of San Antone. But now I cry alone. With no money for college, my lover joined the Corps. My lover will be coming home no more. My lover will be coming home no more. And this house is like a ghost ship rolling. Sometimes I feel I've half a mind to burn this whole place down, to exorcise the ghosts that haunt my home. But now I cry alone. Sometimes at night I swear I see him standing at the door. My lover will be coming home no more. Happily ever after is the dream of any schoolgirl, finding a prince charming of her own. But now I cry alone. I'm sifting through the wreckage that is washed upon the shore. My lover will be coming home no more. My lover will be coming home.
Get one now. Everybody has one. They're almost gone. New, super deluxe, jumbo, handy, portable, lightweight, convenient, collapsible, pre-wrapped, easy to use, guaranteed, available in all sizes and designer colors. Get one now. Won't rust, tarnish, blister, crack, or peel, but it will cause tumors. I think the safety instructions that airline flight attendants deliver before departure could be greatly improved if they were simply a bit more honest and complete. They should include graphic descriptions, accompanied by animated and live-action video, of the devastating physical damage done to the human body during a crash. They should cite examples of various anatomical mutilations. They should also include a detailed description of the damage done to the lungs and skin by fire and smoke inhalation to demonstrate that surviving the impact of the crash alone is not always sufficient. People deserve the truth. Then, how about a more relaxed, breezy pre-flight announcement? Done in the cadences of young people. Hi, listen, we'll be leaving soon. Then we're going to fly a while and get there, possibly this afternoon, okay? Later on, we'll chow down, have some brews, and maybe catch a movie, okay? And hey, try not to ring your bell a lot and wake us up, unless something really scary is going on, okay? Thanks. Oh, and by the way, the captain says do that thing with the belts. Ladies and gentlemen, we're leveling off at our cruising altitude. That means the cockpit crew will soon be lighting up and enjoying a few hits of something really nice we picked up in Hawaii. After about 6 hits, they're going to turn off the autopilot, take their hands off the controls, and let the plane do whatever it wants for a couple of minutes. The captain suggests you keep your seatbelts fastened during this period unless you have a strong appetite for blunt trauma. The captain has just turned on the fasten seatbelt sign. He didn't mean to, but the joint he was smoking fell in his lap, and when he jumped up, his head hit the switch. The captain has turned off the seatbelt sign, but he cautions you to stay alert, as sometimes these planes don't work as well as we'd like them to. The captain has just turned the seatbelt sign on again. Of course, he also stuffed a pound of walnuts up his nose, one by one, so you can decide for yourselves what you want to do about the belts. The pilots who give announcements from the cockpit while you're flying vary. They're not all the same. A socially responsible pilot might say, "On your right, you will see Las Vegas, where millions of visitors are fleeced out of their hard-earned money each year by huge impersonal hotels originally built by brutal criminal syndicates and now owned by brutal criminal corporations. These large impersonal hotels have no concern for service or quality, but merely wish to generate more gambling activity because the advantage is heavily weighted toward the house. Whores and drugs are available at all hours." Poetic pilot. "Off to your right, you'll see the Colorado River, as it snakes its way carefully through the ancient multicolored walls of the Grand Canyon, echoing mutely the dreams and disappointments of countless generations of red-skinned people who inhabited the Great Southwest." Here's an interesting pilot. "There's the house where John Gacy lived. If you look carefully in his backyard, you can see the top of the chute where he dropped the bodies of the 26 children he killed. Over on the right, we'll soon be coming up to the gas station where Ted Bundy picked up his 23rd victim. Altogether, he's thought to have killed between 36 and 50 young women, almost all of whom parted their hair in the middle." A political pilot. "Most of the farms you see used to belong to small farmers, but their land has been brutally repossessed by the greedy, grasping bankers, only to be bought up by huge agribusiness corporations who poison the land and produce tasteless food. These corporations receive billions of dollars a year from the taxpayers for no good reason except to enhance their wealth." Here's a pilot with the blues. "Ladies and gentlemen, I've been feeling kind of depressed lately, and I think you'll agree. We all share guilt for the world's suffering and deteriorating condition. Sometimes I ask myself, is it all worthwhile? Quite often I give up hope completely and try to think of interesting ways of killing myself that would get my name on television." Then we hear the sounds of a struggle in the cockpit.
"Ladies and gentlemen, we have just begun our gradual descent into the Indianapolis area, a descent similar in many ways to the gradual slide of the United States from a first-class world leader to an aggressive third-rate debtor nation of overweight slobs, undereducated slob children, and aimless elderly people who can't afford to buy medicine. The current conditions in Indianapolis, temperature 61 degrees, partly cloudy skies, winds from the southwest, and intense Midwestern boredom."
From the Jennifer and Ted Stanley Studios in Somerville, Massachusetts, this is Living on Earth. I'm Bruce Kellerman. Mossville, Louisiana, is one of the most polluted places in the nation. More than a dozen industrial plants spew millions of pounds of toxic chemicals a year into the environment. When the federal government failed to act, residents of Mossville sued the U.S. for not protecting their environmental human rights. Last year, the community, mostly African American, caught a break when the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights made the historic decision to hear their case. Now Mossville residents may have caught another legal break, as Living on Earth and Planet Harmony's Ike Sriskandaraja reports.
6 years ago, Christine Bennett made her first trip to the nation's capital to file a human rights complaint against her government.
"Being here in Washington, D.C., going to make a petition is one thing, but it's whether or not we're going to be heard is the most important thing. Will somebody do something about it, or are we just wasting our time?"
Bennett and her neighbors have been waiting a long time. The story of their rights not being protected goes back generations. Emancipated slaves settled the bayous of Mossville, Louisiana. They had land, but no voting rights to protect it. After World War II, plastics companies found little resistance to building factories in these disenfranchised black neighborhoods. 14 of those petrochemical plants ring the town today.
"I'm living where my grandparents lived, and I am one of the fourth generations. But now, the place that was once so beautiful and so clean is now a dump."
Each year, the air is loaded with 4 million pounds of carcinogens, earning this place the nickname Cancer Alley. Government researchers have measured 3 times the national average of dioxin in the bodies of Mossville residents. They argue that there are no environmental justice laws on our books to protect America's most vulnerable communities. So that's the case they took to the Inter-American Commission, a last line of defense for human rights in the Western Hemisphere. The U.S. government fought this, arguing that the U.S. has plenty of environmental laws that protect its citizens. But last year, in an interview with Living on Earth, the head of the Environmental Protection Agency, Lisa Jackson, seemed to agree with the people of Mossville.
I think the Mossville case is a really interesting one because what the petitioners argue, as I understand it, is in order to get heard, they had to basically make a case that the laws of this country do not provide them an opportunity for redress. And it is true that at this point there are no environmental justice laws. There's nothing on the books that gives us the ability to do it.
It was what the community of Mossville had been waiting to hear. A high-ranking government official agreeing with the main argument in their case. Administrator Jackson is the first African-American EPA head, and she's from Louisiana. Since she took the job, she's made environmental justice a priority of her agency. But even apparent support from Administrator Jackson didn't put the human rights petition in the clear.
I think no one in Mossville operates under the assumption that everything will be great without struggle, because that hasn't been their experience.
That's Monique Hardin. She's the lawyer for the people of Mossville and has been making the case that they have to go outside of the U.S. to resolve their human rights abuses. The State Department argues back that the citizens can still appeal within the American legal system. To Hardin, Administrator Jackson's comment seemed to bolster the Mossville case.
Her statement was just very positive and very affirming. And so when we read a few months later the brief that was filed by the U.S. government countering that, you know, we felt that, well, the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing here, because we've got the person in charge of environmental protection in the United States agreeing with the Mossville human rights petition, and we've got others within the U.S. government saying it isn't so.
Hardin included Jackson's statement in briefs she filed to the commission last March, but the government hasn't responded. The EPA and the State Department both declined to talk to Living on Earth as well. So we asked someone who advises on environmental human rights cases what this means. Barbara Johnston is a senior research fellow for the Center for Political Ecology in Santa Cruz, California. She says the government's silence speaks volumes.
I think there's probably a minor war occurring, all kinds of skirmishes over where our priorities are, whether we are actually going to demonstrate that we indeed are a nation that has great and huge concern for environmental justice, especially in cases of demonstrated environmental racism, versus our economic liability. Because if the U.S. comes out with a petition that acknowledges its liability in this particular case, there is a very, 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 very long list of injured parties out there.
Which would make environmental justice a very, very, very expensive proposition. But environmental human rights lawyer Monique Hardin says it may be expensive, but that would be the cost of living in a society that values all citizens and neighborhoods equally.
What so often happens in communities that are struggling for environmental justice is that they're in dialogue mode, but there's no remedy. And a favorable decision by the commission would create a different paradigm for what governmental regulation of the environment should look like.
In the meantime, the Mossville case has already opened an avenue for Americans to resolve environmental human rights abuse. A Navajo group fighting a uranium mine in New Mexico has just filed their own human rights petition to the Inter-American Commission. And they cite the Mossville case as supporting their claim. For Living on Earth and Planet Harmony, I'm Ike Sriskandaraja.
I hear the train a-coming, it's rolling around a bend. And I ain't seen the sunshine since I don't know when. I'm stuck in Folsom Prison, and time keeps dragging on. But that train keeps rolling on down to San Antone. When I was just a baby, my mama told me, son, always be a good boy, don't ever play with guns. But I shot a man in Reno just to watch him die. When I hear that whistle blowing, I hang my head and cry. I bet there's rich folks eating from a fancy dining car. They're probably drinking coffee and smoking big cigars. Well, I know I had it coming. I know I can't be free. But those people keep a moving, and that's what tortures me. If they freed me from this prison, if that railroad train was mine, I bet I'd move it on a little farther down the line. Far from Folsom Prison, that's where I want to stay. And I'd let that lonesome whistle blow my blues away.
Gonna lay down my sword and shield, my dog on shield, down by the riverside.
Where was it?
Down by the riverside. Down by the riverside. I'm gonna lay down my sword and shield. Down by the riverside. Gonna study war. Well, I have a vocal inflection from the South in which you say, Wanamwan, as in war no more. Wanamwan. It's kind of tricky, a little bit gibberish. But if you stick out your right foot as you say it, you'll know what I'm after. No, seriously. I'm going to try on my long white robe down by the riverside, down by. Study one, study.
big it was, clutching forks and knives to eat the bacon.
Morning, honey.
Ew, you've got morning breath.
Sorry, let me try some mouthwash.
Oh, God, what? I grabbed the wrong bottle.
No, that's the right bottle.
But it tastes like soap.
That's because it is soap.
Nothing cleans morning breath like soap mouthwash.
Geez, I love soap mouthwash. Not only does it freshen my breath, it also cleans my teeth.
Not medicine-y, not minty. Soap mouthwash always leaves your mouth feeling clean and fresh.
And my kids love it, too. They jump on my husband's stomach to watch the bubbles come out of his mouth.
Yay! I can pop the next one.
And look for the handy bar of soap mouthwash, too.
I just slip a bar of soap in my mouth at lunch. I'm good for the rest of the afternoon.
Soap mouthwash.
Wow, I just licked my cereal bowl clean, and I can see myself in the shine.
Available now in laundry, dish, and car wash flavors.
You can hear great speeches and interviews on accesssacramento.org, or you can go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
And now the end is near, and so I face the final curtain. My friend, I'll say it clear, I'll state my case, of which I'm certain. I've lived a life that's full, I traveled each and every highway, and more, much more than this, I did it my way. Regrets, I've had a few, but then again, too few to mention. I did what I had to do, saw it through without exemption. I planned each charted course, each careful step along the byway, and more, much more than this, I did it my way. Yes, there were times I'm sure you knew, when I bit off more than I could chew. But through it all, when there was doubt, I ate it up and spit it out. At my fill, my share of losing, and now as tears subside, I find it all so amusing to think I did all that, and may I say, not in a shy way. Oh no, oh no, not me, I did it my way. For what is a man, what has he got, if not himself, then he has not to say the things he truly feels.
it was my way.
That's all, folks.